Rookie Big Board, episode 19. I have lost track. This is my third episode in the last 5 days, but I'm so excited. We're still breaking down the post-NFL draft rookie content. We did an analyst mock draft. I did rapid reaction ADP, so hopefully folks that are doing their rookie drafts this week have a little bit of knowledge here. What we're going to do on this episode is we're going to go tier by tier and break down my post-NFL draft of rankings. Now, I'm not going to go player by player through all of these guys because in total, the tiers that we're covering here today, the first six tiers of my rankings board out of 10, covers over 60 guys. So we're going to highlight a couple guys in each tier. But what I want you to particularly pay attention to is the tier drops here. And hopefully this will help give you an idea of player value here over the course of your rookie draft. So we are going to start here in my tier one with Trey Lance. By the way, on the Rookie Big Board, if you are not already a patron, you can get it for $3 a month, and that is full year 365 access to the Rookie Big Board. Here at the end of May, we'll start building the 2022 Rookie Big Board as well. But not only are there FF tiers, which is what I'm going through today, there's also projections. I'm going to focus on tiers here, and Trey Lance falls in that first tier. Now, he's number four overall on the Rookie Big Board right now. He's not the first guy in tier one, but he's somebody I've wanted to particularly highlight because I've gotten a lot of questions lately. Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Trey Lance. It seems to be the question that everybody has. For me, Trey Lance is the perfect pick here in a rebuild. Obviously, a super flex rebuild. The Rookie Big Board is super flex. If you're looking for long-term, high upside, that's Trey Lance. I love it. I love his landing spot. I think he's in a great spot in San Francisco. I think that they probably will play him year one, but it will not be right away. If you're looking for quick fantasy football impact, Trey Lance isn't going to be your guy, but I love Trey Lance. I love his arm. I love his athleticism. I specifically love his athleticism for fantasy football. And remember, when you're buying into Trey Lance, you're buying into those legs, which is so significant for fantasy football, but not only for rushing yards. Trey Lance is strong, he's physical, and I think he's going to get carries at the goal line, those red zone opportunities, in a similar way where Josh Allen gets big fantasy football upside from in Buffalo, except Trey Lance is in an overall more efficient system, more creative play caller, and he's got some really nice weapons around him. Not that Josh Allen doesn't, by the way, but I like the weapons that Trey Lance is stepping into there. You got Brandon Ayuk, you got Debo Samuel. These are guys that can do a lot of different things here. And you got Jalen Hurd, who I'm not going to forget, and I still think he's a critical piece of that offense when healthy. So there's a lot of great pieces here for Trey Lance to take advantage of. So Trey Lance is the guy that I wanted to highlight here in Tier 1. I do have Justin Fields right now as QB2 on the big board. If we're contrasting the two, I think Fields has a higher floor, but Fields is somebody that I'm probably going to draft first because I like Chicago. I like that landing spot for him. I don't think it does too much against him. Now, jumping into Tier 2 here, we have Travis Etienne, who I'm going to highlight here. Travis Etienne is the number eight player right now on the big board, which is probably higher than where a lot of folks have him. I like Travis Etienne's landing spot. I called it from the start that James Robinson was going to get replaced. It made no sense that a brand new head coach wanting to implement his scheme, a head coach, by the way, Urban Meyer, came out and said day one he wants a fast offense. James Robinson is good at a lot of things. He's not fast. Travis Etienne is good at a lot of things, and he is fast. He's the home run hitting thing in Urban Meyer's offense here that he's going to want to help balance out Trevor Lawrence and give him a little bit of relief here, keep defenses guessing which former Clemson weapon that he's going to use. So Travis Etienne, for me, he's going to step in at least 50% of the rushing share here for Jacksonville, and I think he's going to make an immediate impact. In my projections, which are available at the $6 level for patrons, and my projections here for 2021, I have Travis Etienne slotted in as running back 24. It is above Javonte Williams. Javonte Williams is not in Tier 2. He's actually in Tier 3, which we're about to talk about here. But the specific thing with Travis Etienne, he gives you short-term impact and long-term impact. And that's really the difference for me between Travis Etienne and Javonte Williams. I do expect Javonte Williams to have to split that backfield at least in Year 1. I don't think Melvin Gordon is just going away. And we know how impatient Dynasty Fantasy football players are. So if you love Javonte Williams and you want to draft him, I have absolutely no problem with that. I'm just asking you, a year from now, if you haven't gotten the production that you want from Javonte Williams, you need to be okay with that. You need to not look at Travis Etienne's production, get jealous, and trade him. because Javonte Williams' value is going to come in a year. Travis Etienne's value comes now, which is why I have Travis Etienne four spots total and one tier break above Javonte Williams. Now, tier three is pretty interesting here on the rookie big board because there's only two guys in it. It's the smallest tier. It's Terrace Marshall and the running back I just talked about with Javonte Williams. Now, Terrace Marshall, he was my pre-draft wide receiver three. We saw him falling on draft night, and I got to be honest, I got a little nervous here. I saw him pass by a lot of teams I wanted, but he ends up in a really good spot. And we found out, for the most part, we believe that Terrace Marshall fell because of his medicals. But here's the key caveat. From what I understand, from what I'm hearing, it was not that anything was flagged of particular concern from his medicals. Remember, Terrace Marshall had the lower body injury in high school and in his sophomore year at LSU before he broke out in 2019. But Terrace Marshall, it wasn't necessarily that he got flagged for having an issue still. It was that this year in COVID, there wasn't enough time to fully dig into the medicals. And because of that, some teams weren't willing to buy into what they perceived as potential variability. But who buys into it? The Carolina Panthers. Who's the offensive coordinator? Joe Brady, the engineer, the architect behind the 2019 LSU offense that Terrace Marshall thrived in. And if you go back to 2019, I know you're going to remember Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, but Terrace Marshall was on pace to outproduce at least Justin Jefferson that season. If he had finished the season, he only played seven games because of injury, and then he ended up coming back a little bit later. It wasn't a significant injury. He was able to come back at the end of the season, but it limited his production over the course. So with that being said, add into it Joe Brady, reunion with his old offensive coordinator. That's a good sign. What else? What's big in the NFL right now? What's working? What helped Justin Jefferson last year? What helped CeeDee Lamb last year? They played a lot out of what I call the big slot. Big guys, big body. Terrace Marshall, 6'3", 200 pounds. He's probably going to play in the slot. They're going to keep Robbie Anderson in that flanker role. They're going to keep DJ Moore outside as the X-type receiver. And Terrace Marshall is going to be able to shred over the middle of the field. It's where he played in Joe Brady's offense in LSU. And I think it's where they want him to play now. Going into pre-draft, my projections, which again are available to all patrons at the $6 level, that's the full, by the way, full 2021 season projections for every relevant fantasy football player. Pre-draft, I had 20% market share left over in Carolina for receivers. So I immediately plugged in Terrace Marshall there. I gave him 18% of that market share. I readjusted. I dropped Robbie Anderson, dropped DJ Moore about 2% each because I wanted to give Tommy Tremble some targets as well. But focusing specifically on Terrace Marshall, the end result is we have wide receiver three a capability here right away this season with much, much more upside if he ends up getting red zone touches, if he ends up getting touchdowns, and if Sam Darnold ends up developing into the quarterback that he was originally drafted to be, Terrace Marshall has wide receiver one upside. So there is a lot of upside here for Terrace Marshall. So I don't understand why people are fading him. I think that's a little bit of take lock. Maybe you could say I'm in take lock, but I did move Terrace Marshall down from wide receiver three to wide receiver four. Devonta Smith did leapfrog him because I'd like Devonta Smith to come in, probably get about 100 targets right away. So that's my tier three. It's only Javonte Williams and Terrace Marshall because I think they're both first round caliber guys, but I don't think they're in the same conversation as some of the names I've already said, such as Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, Kyle Pitts. Those guys are all tier two guys. You know the tier one guys, Trevor Lawrence, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, and Najee Harris, Ja'Marr Chase. So Terrace Marshall, Javonte Williams, I still think they're first round picks. I would still love to take them in a fantasy football draft, but it didn't feel right for me to have them in that tier one or tier two. And it also didn't feel right to have him in tier four because tier four really opens up here. The top tiers are pretty small. Once you get to tier four here, there's about 10 guys that come in here. So it starts with Mac Jones at 13, remember Superflex board, and it goes all the way down to Trey Sermon at 21. So I guess that's eight guys if I'm doing my math correctly here on the fly. That's the span of tier four. And right in the middle of tier four is Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I want to specifically highlight Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's not the biggest name. He's not the first name I'm drafting out of this tier. I skipped past guys in my rankings like Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore. All right. Amon-Ra St. Brown actually comes in behind those two guys. But I want to talk about a specific point that we're hearing. Now, a lot of folks, you look at the statistics, you look at the historical data, and you want to say, Amon-Ra St. Brown, he was a day three pick. Remember, he was a high round four pick. You want to rule him out and say, listen, I know the hit rates are lower on day three. I'm uninterested in that wide receiver. I'm going to go ahead and fade him. But And I understand that. I understand the historical data, but there are also outliers. All right. The data is the rule. It's the trend. It's not an absolute rule, right? So I am willing to bet against the data, and I take it into account. I take historical trends into account. I'm not disregarding that, but what I'm also not willing to do is look a little deeper into it and be able to find a reason why that data won't hold up to specific situations. And for Amon-Ra St. Brown, it's a pretty easy one. It's volume. Now, what does Amon-Ra St. Brown do good in college? Everything. And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. He did everything good. That was my review on Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's a good route runner. He has good hands. He has good athleticism. He has good contested catchability. He's not great at anything. And that could have swallowed him up in a lot of systems. But in Detroit, he's competing with Tyrell Williams, Brashad Perriman, Quentin Cephas for targets there. In Detroit, it's going to be TJ Hawkinson as the one. And it's going to be, in my opinion, Amon-Ra St. Brown as the two. I haven't pegged him for significant volume here. Now, is he going to get the touchdown upside? Probably not. So he's going to come in somewhere in that wide receiver 3 to wide receiver 4 range here for fantasy football right away in his first season. And even if that's his ceiling, you're going to be able to flip that. If nothing else, a year from now, I believe Amon-Ra St. Brown will be even more valuable than he is now. And that is really, really important to take into account when you're making a draft pick. You're making an investment, right? Some of these guys you are drafting to be on your team for the next 3 years. Hopefully, if you're drafting Najee Harris, your plan is to use Najee Harris to win a championship in the next 3 years. But you also have to be realistic here and look at player values. Look how much they change over the course of the first season. A productive first season can skyrocket your fantasy football value. Gabriel Davis last year, fifth round pick for the NFL. He was a late third round, early fourth round pick for rookie drafts. You could have flipped him this offseason for a second round pick. So Amon-Ra St. Brown, he's sitting there at 16 on the rookie big board right now because I think he's only going to rise in value. And at the end of the day, remember, Amon-Ra St. Brown, high rated prospect. He was a high 4-star coming out of high school. He produced right away at USC. And he's been battling with some really good players and consistently standing out and consistently producing. By the way, despite there being a quarterback carousel over the last few years before settling on Keaton Slovis, and even he suffered injuries over the course of that time. So Amon-Ra St. Brown has done nothing in his college career but produce, but be stable, and but be consistent. And what else could Jared Goff and the Detroit Lions be looking for but good, consistent wide receivers to just help that offense move along forward as they continue their rebuild? So Amon-Ra St. Brown, I'm all in on him. I think he's a great value right now, and that's why I'm going to highlight him in Tier 4. Now, I said Tier 4 was pretty big. Once we get to Tier 5, now we're really getting big here. Tier 5 for me starts at Kenny Gainwell with pick 22, and it's going to go all the way to Hunter Long with pick 35. So basically, the goal here for tiers is just to give you an idea of who realistically could be around at different points in the draft. And what I say is once you see my tiers, you should be working within those tiers to figure out two things. One, roster need. All right, do you have a major, so if you're heading into tier 5, do you have a major need at running back? If you do, you might want to go ahead and put in a little bit of risk, a little bit of volatility here in Kenny Gainwell. He's somebody with a high tape grade, but not necessarily as much immediate volume potential, right? Or do you dig a little bit deeper here in tier 5? You look at a guy like Josh Palmer. He's coming in 31. That's also tier 5. Do you need some wide receiver help? Well, here's the difference with Josh Palmer. Josh Palmer has a lower tape grade, but it looks like he's going to step in with some decent draft capital and have the ability to have some volume right off the bat. So, you know, tier 5, if in all the tiers within it, it's a little bit of pick your poison, but the idea being that within that same tier, there should be a similar range of outcomes. And for Kenny Gainwell, you're drafting him for a specific purpose. And I wanted to bring him up because he was one of the biggest fallers here from pre-draft to post-draft in my rankings. Pre-draft, he was 13. Post-draft, he's coming here at 22. So he did drop 9 spots, all right? I'm not take-locking into Kenny Gainwell. From doing a few mock drafts, a few real drafts so far, it still seems like Kenny Gainwell is back end of the second rookie picks, or early third here in Superflex rookie drafts, and that's still where I've got him. Here's the bottom line. Is it disappointing that he went late in the draft? Yes. What did it reflect a trend of running backs this draft class? Yes, running backs generally got pushed down. Did it also reflect a trend of players that opted out this season? Yes, for the most part. Obviously, if you look at the top, you look at Ja'Marr Chase, you're going to say, oh, opt-outs didn't affect it. guys without that elite status, the opting out, if you look across the board, it really did drop the draft stock of a lot of these players despite their testing. I thought the testing was going to save Kenny Gainwell. That's why I bumped him back up. He ends up falling to Philadelphia. Obviously, here's the elephant in the room. Miles Sanders is the starting running back, and I think he's going to hold that starting running back position. But there's two other paths to success here for Kenny Gainwell. The first, and it's the most obvious one, running backs get injured in fantasy football. We see that all the time, and we see day three running backs take advantage of that and become fantasy football relevant. All right, we can go Chris Carson. We can go James Robinson. That's how James Robinson originally got on the field, and he was a UDFA. I could give various examples. If you're going to bet on a day three player, running back is probably your better bet here, especially in this year's draft class. Get your wide receivers early, running backs late. That's another thing. If you really look at the big board here and look at the tier breaks, you're going to notice wide receivers up, running backs are falling down because of those landing spots. But if Miles Sanders misses time, I think Kenny Gainwell is the guy to come in and take over. You know, I don't think Boston Scott is going to keep Kenny Gainwell off the field. Now, the other thing, Kenny Gainwell did play running back at Memphis. I do think that they could bring Kenny Gainwell out specifically for pass catching downs. He's a great pass catcher. I also think that they could roll Kenny Gainwell out and play him in the slot a little bit here. So he could end up having a little bit of a hybrid role. They could move him around the field. I could see them using two running back sets here. And remember, this is an offense that's probably going to be running the ball a lot. They already have Jalen Hurts as their quarterback here, who, of course, is a mobile quarterback. So they could be looking for a lot of versatility in this offense, a lot of explosion in this offense. And Kenny Gainwell will certainly contribute to that. So at the back end of the second round, if you want a little bit of a safer pick, you know, other guys who are in this tier, Amari Rodgers. He's 26 right now on the big board. Depending on context, depending on my roster construction, if I felt good with my running backs, I would take Amari Rodgers, who's four spots lower technically than Kenny Gainwell, because I think he has a lot higher of a floor. Now, hopefully Aaron Rodgers comes back, but if I am in desperate need of running backs, or if I'm somebody who really focuses my roster construction in startup dynasty drafts on wide receivers, tight ends, quarterbacks, and I kind of, you know, let the running backs chips fall where they may, then I'm interested in taking a shot on Kenny Gainwell, because that he presents the upside here of a running back zero type roster construction. I'm not saying he's a running back zero guy exclusively. I'm just saying if you've built yourself into that construction intentionally, unintentionally, Kenny Gainwell might be a guy for you. Now, I'm only going to do one more tier. I mentioned here there are six tiers on the rookie big board, but they start to get really big here as we open up. As you can imagine, the undrafted guys, the waiver wire guys. I mean, we have over 169 guys ranked here on the big board. So I'd say not over 169 guys ranked on the big board. But tier six, it still includes some really interesting players. And I actually really struggled with which tier six player I wanted to highlight. And I decided to go with Emir Smith-Marset, who landed with the Minnesota Vikings for a couple reasons. One, I feel like I've talked about a lot of these other guys despite liking them a lot. I'll quickly mention, you know, Cordell Powell falls into this group, and I think he's really interesting landing with the Chiefs. Des Fitzpatrick, who I didn't have a high tape grade on, but I know the NFL was high on him, and he lands with the Tennessee Titans, where there's a ton of volume, so I almost talked about Des Fitzpatrick. You know, I don't mind Javian Hawkins, obviously a big faller for me because he went UDFA, but he went to the Atlanta Falcons. He could win out some significant volume early on, but I haven't talked a ton about Emir Smith-Marset, despite the fact that I really liked his pre-draft tape. Now, I didn't give him a super high score, but he's a super fun player to watch. He's athletic. They moved him all around the field there at Iowa. He's got nice hands. I don't want to peg him or put the label on him as a gadgety guy, but he has some gadgety upside. Here's why I'm interested. I know you say Minnesota Vikings, you know, they don't really roll out a lot of three wide receiver sets. There's a lot of emphasis on Adam Thielen, a lot of emphasis on Justin Jefferson. All right, well, they put a third wide receiver on the field, all right? They do logistically do that a decent amount of the time. And Chad Beebe is not impressive. I mean, he's fine, but I think if Emir Smith-Marset can prove to be an athletic guy and be versatile, then he's going to see a lot of snaps this season. And so for a guy right now who I'm seeing consistently going, you know, maybe late third round, probably fourth round of your fantasy football drafts, you know, he's coming in on the big board for me right at 45, but I'm willing, he jumped up 15 spots, and I'm willing to get pretty aggressive on him if I need to, because I think he's got nice upside, and of course, the draft capital came along with that, round four draft capital, that's pretty good for me. You know, obviously Adam Thielen is aging out. I don't see him taking the Adam Thielen role per se, But what are we looking for in rounds four and rounds five of our rookie drafts and round six if we're degenerates like me and we're playing real deep rosters, right? We're looking for upside, and I think Emer Smith-Marset presents some of that upside. So there it is. It's my first six tiers here. I hope not only that you got an idea of which players fall within the tiers, and again, if you're a patron, you have full access to see all of these guys in more detail, look at their exact rankings, but I specifically wanted to talk about some of these tier break points. You know, right at the top, you have the top five guys that I think are really a solid tier, and then it starts to open up a little bit with a lot of really good options there. If you're drafting in the mid-first round, I think the value of those picks, you know, 105 through 110 is really strong. And then, you know, you kind of have 110 to 202 as another strong point. A lot of folks have been joking that after you get past the halfway point of the second round of fantasy football rookie drafts right now, you start to fade a little bit. And I will say the volatility definitely increases, the floors go away, but there's still a lot of high upside there in that, you know, that tier four range that I was talking about, which would be about the mid second round to the mid mid third round of your rookie drafts. The volatility really opens up after that mid third round. That's looking at tiers five and heading into tier six as you get into the fourth round and fifth round of your rookie drafts. But the point is, there's still upside there. There's still value there. And at the rookie big board, we're still digging into it. So this is our third rookie big board episode here in the last 5 days. We're going to keep cranking out draft content. And I want to be clear here. This is a 365 year-round rookie big board. So we're going to continue adjusting these players' value, the rookie big board score. We're going to continue moving them around here, tracking news through camp season, through preseason, as we head into the season, helping you understand what their dynasty value is. We also have the Devy Big Board, which is going to be getting a huge update once I catch my breath and finish digesting this draft class. In late May, early June, we're going to build the 2022 rookie board. And I got to tell you, the patron Slack has potentially never been more active than it is right now. So if you are not into it, you can actually, that is the bottom tier. I really don't talk about this, but it's worth $1 a month, which is literally all it is, just to get into the patron Slack. We have the On the Clock channel. So it's awesome because not only have I been giving personalized advice to folks when they're on the clock, but if I'm busy with my real life job, other folks are jumping in there and answering those questions too. It's absolutely fantastic. I love the community. I love all the support, and we're going to continue making this product even better all season long. Hey, I appreciate you listening into this episode. If you're watching, please subscribe. Please give the video a like. If you're listening, please, please, please leave the podcast a 5-star review. Let's help some other folks get into this process here. It's all about the process, and we're finishing up the 2021, continuing on through, and we're getting ready to start the 2022 process. I appreciate you checking out this episode.